Yes, I noticed all the Irish people started with a prayer. As a good American, I'm going to start with a joke. I took a History of Ireland class at the Catholic University of Dallas, and the professor was a very funny man. So he started the History of Ireland by saying, "You may know this, but Ireland is an island. The main religion there is Catholicism. The weather in Ireland is rain. The principal export of Ireland is people. The primary natural resource is grass." And he went on and on and on like this. But of course, my own grandfather came directly from County Kilkenny to the United States. And so the father of my father came from near Thomastown. And we still have cousins all over County Kilkenny. Some are actually in the Dublin area as well. And my grandfather left the Isle of Saints and Scholars to go to the land of opportunity, but also the land of McDonald's, the land of Hollywood, the land of blue jeans. A lot of, you know, the cultural things that the United States spreads around the world are not that good. You know, Bill Gates is one of our principal exports. And the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation. The reason why Human Life International exists is because our founder, Father Paul Marx, decided that the United States was doing so much damage to the world that there should be reparation, that there should be an organization that leaves the United States to spread the gospel of life. It spreads what is truly good and wonderful and the teachings of the Catholic Church on marriage and family and faith. And so that really is the origin of HLI, of Human Life International. Now, unfortunately, the lovely Irish accent of my grandfather was lost over the years. And so I speak with a very American accent, so I'll try and do my best. Every child is a blessing from God. Every child, even a handicapped child, is a blessing from God. What a radical notion. Even children that are not carefully planned to come exactly at the right time are a blessing from God. Pope Paul VI said this. What a radical notion. Even children, many in our culture would say we are simply bonkers, that we are soft in the head. And he went further in Humanae Vitae. He said, marital relations, sexual relations, belong only between a man and a woman, united by a lifelong sacramental bond, and open to the possibility of procreating a new human life every single time. Many people would say that is dangerous, irresponsible talk, a crime against the planet to say such a thing. And yet, Blessed Paul VI, soon to be Saint Paul VI, said this in Humanae Vitae. This message, 50 years later, is only growing more counter-cultural. So I'm going to speak to you about the global impact of Humanae Vitae. In fact, we will never know, or perhaps in heaven we will know, if Humanae Vitae had been enthusiastically embraced worldwide, what might have been. Apart from the Amish and the Hutterite communities and certain tribes in Papua New Guinea and the Amazon rainforest, every other human community on the planet, to a greater or lesser degree, has accepted the sexual revolution, the contraceptive revolution. And so we live in a modern world where the majority follow this culture of death, as St. John Paul II called it, who do not follow the teachings of Humanae Vitae. And in fact, in 1968, what really shocked people was what Humanae Vitae did not say. The pundits, the elites in politics, the media, even many of the clergy, confidently expected capitulation. Capitulation, a surrender to the rising tide of the sexual revolution. After all, a majority report of the Vatican Birth Control Commission had recommended to the Pope a liberalization of the Church's constant teaching on the grave immorality of contraception. This confidential document was leaked to the press to add pressure on the Pope. The Anglicans had already caved in 1930, and they had given up their doctrinal ban on birth control. Some academics argued that the new technology of the pill, with its hormonal rather than physical barrier method of blocking conception, could be theologically acceptable to the Catholic Church. And on top of this, Pope Paul VI was seen as a modernizing pontiff that liberals could influence. Vatican II, he was the first pope to travel around the world, address the United Nations, etc. They were sure that Paul VI was going to give in. And blessed Paul VI infuriated secular people as well as liberal Catholics when he reaffirmed, quote, "The Church, nevertheless, in urging men to observe the precepts of the natural law, which it interprets by its constant doctrine, teaches that each and every marital act must of necessity retain its intrinsic relationship to the procreation of human life." Patrick quoted this at the beginning. Paragraph 11. These were fighting words. Fighting words. The Pope said contraception is gravely evil not just for Catholics, but for everyone by virtue of the natural law. Astonishment followed by outrage greeted Humanitate's reaffirmation of the Magisterium of the Church on marriage and procreation. Worldwide, 1968 proved a year infamous for its assassinations, riots, and protests. You may recall that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968. Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1968. I mean, the world was falling apart in 1968. There were the Vietnam War protests, Mai 68, you know, I live near Paris. The entire city of Paris was shut down for a month with barricades across the streets. I mean, all over Europe, all over the world, 1968 was an incredible year. And then Humanitate comes out. And all hell broke loose, literally. The unprecedented dissent from Humanitate by Catholic leaders added to the chaos. Famous theologians, even national bishops' conferences, disagreed publicly with the Pope. Worst of all, prominent dissenters, far from facing sanctions, far from being punished, actually persecuted many who were faithful to church teaching. There were circumstances of people who believed what Humanitate taught, what the church teaches, who were then punished for that. For years, even decades, a disquieting silence, a shroud of silence surrounding contraception descended on pulpits all across the world. More and more lay Catholics became ensnared in the contraceptive mentality through badly formed consciences. One visiting priest did this in a Connecticut parish in the U.S. He leaned into the microphone and he said, "Contraception." And then he came back and he said, "I bet that word has not come out of this pulpit in many, many years." And of course he was right. And he gave a sermon in three words, one word, really. Father Paul Marx talked about this. He was kind of the Humanitate priest, you know. He was very famous for promoting natural methods. He actually learned calendar rhythm when he was a seminarian. He then learned the Billings method, and then the symptothermal method. And so at first they called him Father Rhythm. And then they called him Father Temperature. And he said, I hope they never call me Father Mucus. But you know, he was a huge promoter of natural methods and Humana Vitae's message. And he went all around the world preaching the truth. The truth about the church's teaching on marriage and family, contraception, sterilization, abortion, everything, the full package. And I had the great joy of spending 8 years working in Front Royal, Virginia. Front Royal, Virginia is in Northern Virginia, very close to Washington, D.C. It's where Human Life International, HLI, has its international headquarters. And it's a small town. It's a small town of about 15,000 people. It has one parish. So the parish there is St. John the Baptist. And I can tell you, in that parish, you do hear the message of Humanae Vitae frequently. And what does that translate into? Well, I can tell you, it's wonderful to see in St. John the Baptist Church in Front Row, Virginia, families that take up the entire pew. One family, the entire pew in the church. My impression is the average completed family in that parish has 5 or 6 children, but many have 10 or more. I know of one family with 13 children, another with 12, and it's a small community. The entire population, as I said, is only about 15,000 people, and it has a shrinking, I emphasize the word shrinking, Protestant majority, because the Catholics are just populating Front Row. Another interesting thing is I remember the first homily of our new pastor. We had a new pastor come into the parish, Father Edward Hathaway. And he said, you can tell the sanctity of a parish not by how long the lines are for communion, but how long the lines are for confession. And in St. John the Baptist Parish, there are long lines for confession. There's confession offered every day, but on Saturdays when they offer confession all afternoon, they're just huge lines of people. It's a real pain to go to confession in that parish because you have to wait. And it's an exceptional place. They have currently now 3 young men studying for the priesthood from that parish. 2 young ladies studying to become sisters. 5 religious vocations from one parish. In a little town of less than 15,000 people, of whom only about, you know, 1/3 are Catholics. But that's what it is. Humanae Vitae is such a fruitful thing if it's properly preached. As Dr. Janet Smith, perhaps the foremost scholar specializing in Humanae Vitae, says, the price the church has paid for neglecting to preach the truth of Humanae Vitae and to promote natural family planning is incalculable. Lives have been ruined. Vocations have been lost. Priests have left the priesthood. Families have been destroyed. Conversions have been stymied. The culture has been deprived of the bold witness that the church could and should give to the spectacular vision God has for human sexuality. And I can give a personal example of the amazing benefits to the church of having Humanae Vitae. A very good friend of our family, a strong, incredible, really, pro-life leader, his name is Rex Moses. Now that is a name, isn't it? King Moses. He's going to save his people. Well, Rex Moses was raised a Methodist. Are there any Methodists in the room? Okay, so I can say this. His church, the Methodist church, is fairly lukewarm, in the United States anyway, on its stance on abortion, and has surrendered 100% on contraception. There's no Methodist teaching against contraception under any circumstance. So one day Rex was at a pro-life rally in the United States, and a priest happened to be standing next to Rex. And the priest just casually mentioned that up until 1930, all Christian denominations agreed that contraception was gravely sinful. And then the Anglicans broke ranks, and then the other Protestants slowly, one by one, and not slowly, quickly, decided that they weren't going to teach against contraception either. And then only really the Catholic Church and a few other Christian denominations stand against contraception. And this really troubled Rex. He was like, wow, I mean, if this is such a vital thing, you know, is it right or is it wrong in marriage? I mean, this is a central aspect of church teaching about, you know, what's right and wrong in marriage. Am I in a state of sin right now or am I righteous? I need to know. So he started studying. And more he studied, the more and more he saw that the Catholic Church went back to Jesus. And the Methodist Church went back to John Wesley. And it's a lot better to be based upon Jesus, you know, than to be based on John Wesley. And so he became a Catholic. Not only did he become a Catholic, but his wife stopped taking the pill. And he started having more children. And now one of his younger children is 10 months away from priestly ordination. It's just so beautiful. And I could repeat this story thousands of times. Thousands of times. It reminds me of a story that I heard from Archbishop Tadeusz Kondrushevitz. Archbishop Kondrushevitz, that's a mouthful, Kondrushevitz. He was the Archbishop of Moscow in Russia. Currently, he's the Archbishop of Minsk in Belarus. One time, he asked a Russian Orthodox prelate, "Why is it that you, the Russian Orthodox, are always complaining about Catholic proselytism in Russia? Why is it that you're so angry that the Catholics are making converts in Russia? I mean, the evangelical Protestants are making many more converts than we make." And it's true. The evangelical Protestants are converting tons of Russians. And the Catholics, they convert a few, but not as many. And the Russian Orthodox bishop responded, "You cut deep. It is the best Russian Orthodox who become Catholics. It's the people who never go to church, who are never present anywhere in the Russian Orthodox faith. They become evangelical Protestants. But you take our best priests, you take our best lay people, because they study the roots of the church, and they say, wow, the Catholic Church has it right. The Russian Orthodox Church is schismatic. And they become Catholics. And they really resent that. But it's because of Humanae Vitae, right? Because the Catholic Church stands for something since Jesus, since St. Peter, the rock. You know, and our teaching does not change, no matter what the world says. It's a very beautiful thing. Pope St. John Paul II helped to reverse the rampant confusion after Humanae Vitae was swept under the rug in so many places by his clear teaching. The Polish philosopher Pope even went further. John Paul II went further than Paul VI, because he said, contraceptive sex was not only intrinsically evil by virtue of severing the procreative dimension of conjugal relations from the unitive end, but that it also attacks the unitive end. St. John Paul the Great argued that by explicitly rejecting each other's fertility, the contracepting couple also contradicts the mutual self-giving that should be part of marital relations. We're supposed to give all of ourselves to each other as husband and wife. And the contracepting couple says, "I give all of myself to you except for my fertility." And that's a big part of ourselves that we're holding back. And so not only does it sever the unitive and the procreative, but it also damages the unitive aspect. Well, I can speak from personal experience, not of contraception, but of infertility. My wife and I were unable to bear children for the first 9 years of our marriage. And we felt incomplete, even cursed at times. And it was a terrible irony, right? I was spending all my life promoting life and family, and we could not have children. And so we prayed, and so many people prayed for us. We went to many licit, morally good fertility treatments, you know, nothing like IVF or anything like that, natural technology, etc. And after 9 years of marriage, we had a daughter, little Therese. It's the joy of our life. 8 years old now, Therese Marie. And in a way, sometimes I joke, right? My wife's name is Marie, and I'm Joseph, so it's Mary and Joseph. So a lot of people think, wow, you must be a little holy family, right? But we weren't able to have more than one child, like the holy family. We had another pregnancy, little Mary Joy, who passed away at the end of the first trimester, who was miscarried. And since then, we've had no pregnancies. So we're suffering from what's called secondary infertility. That is, you're able to have children, but then you're not able to have more. And it's a real suffering. People talk about the suffering of infertility. You know, psychologists, you know, counselors who help couples that have infertility, they say, really, it's similar to the pain of getting a diagnosis of cancer or of having a close personal friend or a close family member die. You know, it's a huge suffering. And contraception inflicts this suffering of infertility. Now, people may not know that they're suffering from infertility, but they're searching to have infertility. They're searching for sterility. It's a curse. It's not a blessing. So, speaking of withholding the blessing of fertility from a marriage, this contraceptive mentality, as it's sometimes called, can also apply to couples using natural methods of fertility regulation. If a couple uses the Billings method or other natural method that is not, repeat, not intrinsically evil as contraception is, but they use it with the intention of avoiding pregnancy without a grave reason, and having a serious reason not to postpone a pregnancy is the necessary condition for intentionally postponing that pregnancy in a moral way, then it's also selfish and sinful. For an act to be good, both the means used and the intention of the person have to be good. So even though the means is good, the natural methods are fine, the intention also has to be good. Now, with contraception, the intention might be good. You know, we can't have a child right now. You know, the problems we're facing are terrible, or our health problems are so, but the means also has to be good. You cannot use an immoral means for a good end. And so you have to have both of those things together. Nevertheless, it is remarkable how few married couples that use natural methods divorce. All kinds of studies have been done about couples that use natural family planning, and their divorce rate is minuscule, so small. In societies where half the marriages fall apart, couples that use natural methods have 1%, 2% divorce rate. They must be doing something right. They must be doing something right. After the widespread adoption of the pill, of the birth control pill, the divorce rate exploded in the USA and everywhere else. The contraception became the norm. And we're talking about cause and effect, right? The birth control pill can really be said to be a poison to a marriage that can kill many marriages through divorce. Right? It literally inserts sin at the heart of that marriage. John Paul II used the evocative image that contraception and abortion are fruits from the same plant. In Evangelium Vitae, that's his encyclical, The Gospel of Life, I urge you to read it again. It is such a rich source of wisdom and pro-life spirituality. Contraception and abortion are fruits of the same plant. And Human Life International's founder, Father Paul Marx, frequently spoke of the link between contraception and abortion. Here's a quote. In every country, bar none, contraception has led to abortion, and once abortion, to infanticide, the prelude to full-blown euthanasia. Once the purposes of sex are torn loose from procreation and the family, the homosexual thrust rears its head. Right? Because that's the other thing. If it's okay to have sexual relations that are sterile, sexual relations that are infertile, then homosexual relations, you know, seem all of a sudden more reasonable, right? One of the main objections to homosexual relations is that they're sterile, that there's no way that they can conceive. But if having, you know, intentionally sterile relations is acceptable, then homosexuality becomes more acceptable, right? So it's one more step in that direction. Prophetic words. Interestingly, many honest abortion promoters, these are Planned Parenthood people, etc., agree. They agree with this analysis that contraception leads to abortion. and even more abortions than before. It's scientifically verifiable, I mean, a matter of statistics. Although, I like this quotation from American author Mark Twain. Mark Twain said that there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. You can manipulate statistics, you can invent statistics, you know, you have to be very careful what sources you're coming from. But it is undeniable, undeniable, that the abortion rate grew in the United States as the contraception rate, as the birth control rate continued very high. So people who were using contraception were obviously not solving the abortion problem. There were more and more abortions in the 70s, the 80s. It really wasn't until about 15 years ago that the abortion rate started dropping in the United States. But for decades, the abortion rate grew while the birth control rate continued very, very high. And people say, oh, well, we'll solve abortion by everyone using contraception. No. Why? Because contraception fails. Because people who are using contraception feel that they're safe. We're having safe sex. And so they're more promiscuous than they would have been otherwise. They're having more partners. And the failure rate is higher. And so you have many more relations. Because there's a statistical failure rate, you have all these unplanned pregnancies. And of course, if you didn't want to have any children, what's the solution to an unplanned pregnancy? Abortion. The contraceptive mentality is anti-child. Contraceptives use encourages an increase in promiscuity. It's as simple as that. The Lancet Journal published an interesting article about seatbelts. About seatbelts. When seatbelts first became mandatory in the UK, so you had by law to wear a seatbelt in your car, they expected the death rate from motor accidents to fall. They increased. There were more deaths on the roads after they passed the seatbelt law. And so they had to do studies, they had to find out why. Why is it that with people wearing their seatbelts, there are more deaths, not fewer? And they discovered the reason. And the reason was, people felt safe. I've got my seatbelt on, I can drive any which way I want. I can overtake this car this way, overtake this car that way, I can do whatever I want. And of course, if you have an accident and you're wearing your seatbelt, but you run straight into a lorry, you're still going to die. It's a fact. So they then had to do all these educational campaigns and say, just because you're wearing a seatbelt doesn't mean that you're safe. You have to also drive safely. Right? And the same thing happened with condoms. So the same trap with condoms and AIDS. People were told that with condoms, they were safe from AIDS. Wear a condom, no problem, do whatever you want, you can't catch AIDS. They didn't quite say that, but they always called it safe sex. People got this message. Well, of course, condoms have a failure rate. They don't work 100% of the time. In fact, the user failure rate for condoms, when they slip, when they break, when they fall off, when they're not used appropriately, etc., 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 the actual user failure rate is upwards of 12%. Couples that use condoms faithfully use condoms, 18% of them are pregnant after 1 year of living together. 18%. And of course, you can only get pregnant, all of you who know about natural methods, a few days in the month. But you can catch AIDS 365 days out of the year. So the failure rate for pregnancy is 18%. What is the failure rate for catching AIDS? Well, here's an example. And we talk about this. We compare the Philippines and Thailand. The Philippines and Thailand. They both had their first case of AIDS in 1983. 1983, the first case of AIDS was diagnosed in their countries. And by 1991, the epidemic had really started in both these countries. So what did they do? What did they do? Well, in Thailand, they had a national campaign. A national campaign. The Ministry of Health, they threw huge amounts of money. It was called 100% condoms. 100% condoms. They had people walking around with large plastic bags over their heads in the shape of a condom, distributing condoms on the streets. There were condoms in every possible venue, at hotels, and they were just handing them out to the countryside. What was the result of a 100% condom campaign? Millions and millions of condoms distributed all over Thailand. What was the result? 440,000 infected people. 440,000 people in Thailand infected. A real AIDS crisis. What happened in the Philippines? First case of AIDS, the same year as Thailand. They did not do a 100% condom campaign. Instead, there was a group called AIDS-Free Philippines that said fidelity in marriage, abstinence before marriage, be faithful, avoid the risk of AIDS by abstinence and fidelity. In the year that Thailand had 440,000 cases of AIDS, how many cases in the Philippines? How many cases? Best guess. 15,000. 440,000, 15,000. Incredible. All right? So you throw tons of condoms at the problem, and what happens? It actually gets worse. I mean, Pope Benedict XVI was crucified in the media when he said condoms were not the solution to the AIDS crisis. He said that on an airplane as he was flying down to Africa I think it was a trip to Cameroon. They're like, how dare he? He's condemning all these people to death because he's not promoting condoms. And what happens when you promote condoms? 440,000 cases. What happens when you don't promote condoms? You promote fidelity abstinence like the church does? 15,000 cases. I mean, you know, this is just statistics. Watch out for statistics, Mark Twain. But what the church and all reasonable people say, people were promoting the condom using this analogy. If you're on an airplane that's about to crash, isn't it better to have a parachute to be able to jump out of the airplane and save yourself? And because if you don't use condoms and you're promiscuous, you're going to catch AIDS, you're going to crash in an airplane, better to wear a condom and have a 90% chance, you know, of preventing AIDS with every single act, then, you know, to have a parachute, then to crash with the plane. But the Catholic Church says, don't get on the plane.
It sounds reasonable, doesn't it? I mean, if you're going to be having condomized sex, tons and tons of people, with a 10% failure rate, eventually what is going to happen, right? If you do anything 10 times and there's a 10% failure rate, statistically, it's going to happen. So it's a wonderful thing. It's interesting, and it's actually far worse, right? Dr. Anton Lisets, who's the head of HLI Croatia, says they will never invent a condom. They will never invent a condom that prevents the transmission of deadly mortal sin. They might invent a condom that doesn't fail 10% of the time. They might invent a condom that works 99.9% of the time. But they'll never invent one that prevents the transmission of sin, of fornication, of adultery, or simply the grave sin of contraception within marriage. Human Life International presents the wisdom and prophetic insight of Humanae Vitae in our educational apostolate. We often refer to Blessed Paul VI's predictions. Humanae Vitae, of course, has these predictions that accepting artificial contraception will bring certain things about. Number one, a general lowering of moral standards throughout society. A general lowering of moral standards. Who can claim that anywhere in the world has become more virtuous since 1968? Anywhere in the world where the standard of morality has actually gotten better. A rise in infidelity. Is there a place in the world where there's less adultery today than there was then? Poland? I don't know. It's a good question. Good question. They do have a free church in Poland now that they didn't have under communism. In a certain way, and it's interesting, when I go to Central and Eastern Europe, the former communist countries, it's a bit refreshing. It's a bit refreshing because under communism, there was never this abortion is a beautiful thing. Abortion is a woman's right. Abortion is a human right. Now, under communism, they said abortion is a bad thing, but we're going to do it anyway. You know, we're going to impose abortion on you. All the countries that that were under the Warsaw Pact that the Soviets conquered, the communists forced them to legalize abortion all throughout Central and Eastern Europe. But they never said it was a good thing. They never said it was a woman's right. They just said, no, we need to control population. You know, it's anyone. Interesting. A lessening of men's respect for women. Prediction of Paul VI, a lessening of men's respect for women because of contraception. The latest Hollywood scandals of mainly liberals like Harvey Weinstein, etc., show where we're at today. In fact, I have a quotation here. The fact that the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae should fall within the year of the Me Too campaign, where all the women are coming out talking about the sexual harassment that they have suffered at the hands of lecherous men, at the hands of disrespectful men, powerful men, most of whom are in favor of contraception, in favor of abortion, liberals, like the Hollywood liberals. Harvey Weinstein is a big promoter of abortion, big supporter of the Democratic Party, etc. That it should happen in the year of the Me Too campaign is ironic, since that movement painfully reveals how the modern sexual ethic has debased men, women, and sex, something that St. Paul VI predicted would happen if contraception became widely available. The entertainment world and secular institutions must clearly, radically change their cultures. We do have a sick society where women are not treated well, where they're sexually harassed habitually. And why is that? One of the reasons, contraception. And the coercive use of birth control by governments. Paul VI predicted this. If we allow contraception, governments are going to use this for population control. How many here are familiar with China's population policy? Yeah, most people would be familiar. The one-child policy. Have you heard of the one-child policy? It lasted for decades. It's been changed to the two-child policy, but essentially it's the same, only now they allow two children. There was a Chinese minister at a conference on climate change, UN conference. He boasted that his country had prevented the births of 500 million Chinese. He was bragging about the fact that they had aborted, sterilized, contracepted 500 million Chinese out of existence. That was his claim to fame. His country had done its job. And so many other places had sterilization campaigns where they would go into villages and sterilize people in India, in Peru, in Nigeria. I mean, all over the world, these campaigns, you know, coercive campaigns of population. Today, refugees. I was just in Rome. I was at the meeting of the Pontifical Academy for Life. We had a person there who was with the International Catholic Migration Commission. He talked about the Rohingya. You familiar with the Rohingya from Burma who are fleeing to Bangladesh? What happens when they arrive in Bangladesh? They get Norplant inserted in them to make them sterile for up to 5 years. You know, the refugees, they're in their camps and they're being imposed upon them birth control, sterilization. I saw this myself in 1999 in camps when the Kosovar refugees were in Albania. And again, they were in camps, you know, barbed wire fences, armed guards, and then they were told that they needed reproductive health. They needed to have their reproductive health, which meant what? Abortion, sterilization, birth control, etc. That was reproductive health. No reproduction and no health involved, just population control. So these four evils are afflicting the modern world. The general lowering of moral standards, a rise in infidelity, a lessening of men's respect for women, the coercive use of birth control by governments. In China, people think that in China you have the right to have one child, or now you have the right to have two children. That's not true. You have the right to have two children when the government gives you permission. You get a permission slip from the government. You apply for permission to have a child. Villages will have their quotas, right? This village is allowed to have 10 children this year. And then the head man in the village will distribute the permissions. If you are pregnant without permission, they're going to catch you. They're going to force you to have an abortion. If they can't catch you, they're going to find your family members and put them in jail. They're going to bulldoze your house. There's a population police. I know a nun who works in Beijing. She runs a clandestine home for mothers, pregnant mothers, who are hiding out from the police in China, who are looking to catch them to force them to have an abortion. They force people who have illegal babies. So you have a baby illegally, you avoided the police, you managed to have this child. They force the families to pay fines that are sometimes six times the annual salary of that family. I mean, can you imagine that kind of cruelty inflicted on people? I mean, what kind of reproductive rights are those? You can have a baby when the government gives you permission. And yet, the feminist organizations, the organizations that claim to be pro-woman, they praise the Chinese government. They're doing such a wonderful job promoting reproductive health, reproductive rights. It's incredible hypocrisy. No total approach to promoting the rights to life, marriage, and family can ignore the tremendous assault of population control and birth control on the world since the 1960s. Standing up to the politically correct contraceptive imperialism of elites like Melinda and Bill Gates, George Soros, and others is still the church's task today. Pope Paul VI was violently attacked for Humanae Vitae, and he never wrote another encyclical until his death 10 years later. He wrote it in 68, he died in 78. He never wrote it. He was so shocked by the attacks upon him. And he deserves our gratitude for courageously defending the rights and duties of all married couples, but especially the poor, targeted for contraception and sterilization, especially the poor. When they go out and they sterilize people, they're not sterilizing Europeans. They're not sterilizing rich people. They're sterilizing poor, brown, black people. They're going after Africans and Latin Americans, Asians. It's where population control is at. Pope Benedict XVI had this to say on the 40th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. The teaching expressed by the encyclical Humanae Vitae is not easy. It's not an easy teaching. Yet it conforms with the fundamental structure through which life has always been transmitted, always, since the world's creation, with respect for nature and in conformity with its needs. Concern for human life and safeguarding the person's dignity require us not to leave anything untried so that all may be involved in the genuine truth of responsible conjugal love, in full adherence to the law engraved on the heart of every person. And Pope Francis, dear Pope Francis, had this to say about Blessed Paul VI and Humanae Vitae in 2015 at the Mall of Asia Arena in Manila. I think of Blessed Paul VI at a time when the problem of population growth was being raised. Of course, there was the overpopulation scare, right? The population bomb. That book, you know, Paul Ehrlich, came out in the 60s. Everyone was talking about overpopulation in the 60s. He had the courage to defend openness to life in families. He knew the difficulties that there are in every family. And so in his encyclical, he was very merciful towards particular cases. and he asked confessors to be very merciful and understanding in dealing with particular cases. But he also had a broader vision. He looked at all the peoples of the earth, and he saw his threat of families being destroyed for lack of children. Paul VI was courageous. He was a good pastor, and he warned his flock of the wolves who were coming. From his place in heaven, may he bless this evening, unquote. It was on the flight back from this trip to Sri Lanka and the Philippines that Pope Francis made his widely reported breed like rabbits statement. Here is a lengthier quotation from his in-flight interview. The question was from Christoph Schmidt, a German journalist, and the German journalist said this: "You spoke of the great numbers of children in the Philippines and about how happy you were that there were so many children. But according to several polls, the majority of Filipinos think that the enormous growth of the Filipino population is one of the most important reasons for the immense poverty in the country. In the Philippines, on average, one woman gives birth to more than 3 children in her lifetime. And the Catholic position regarding contraception appears to be one of the few questions on which a great number of people in the Philippines do not agree with the Church. What are your thoughts on that, Holy Father?" And Pope Francis responded, quote, "I believe that the number of 3 per family, which you mentioned, is important, according to the experts, for maintaining population. 3 per couple. When it is below this level, you have the other extreme, as for example in Italy, where I have heard, I don't know if it's true, that in 2024 there will be no money left to pay pensioners. Population decrease. That is why the key phrase for responding is one which the Church constantly uses, as I do: responsible parenthood. How does this work? With dialogue. Each person with his or her pastor has to try to exercise this responsible parenthood." And Pope Francis continued, quote, "Some people believe that, pardon my language," the Pope said, "pardon my language, in order to be good Catholics, we should be like rabbits. No, responsible parenthood. This is clear, and it is the reason why in the Church there are marriage groups. There are experts in this area. There are pastors, and people are trying. And I know any number of solutions which are licit and have helped this. You did well to ask me this. Something else is curious, which does not have to do with this directly, but is in fact related. For many poor people, a child is a treasure. True enough. Here too, one needs to be prudent, but for them, a child is a treasure. God knows how to help them. Maybe some are not prudent in this area, that is true, responsible parenthood, but we also need to consider the generosity of those fathers and mothers who see in every child a treasure." Unquote. That's what the Holy Father said. Now, the headlines in every newspaper in the world, almost every newspaper in the world, said, "Holy Father says, Pope says, don't breed like rabbits." We live in an era of fake news. We do. Manipulated news. Being horrified at the murderous ideologies of yesterday does not protect one against the zeitgeist, the dominant worldview of today. Otherwise, more people would notice that over 2 billion children, over 2 billion with a B, children, have been aborted in the last 50 years worldwide. That's a low estimate. Between 40 and 50 million children are aborted worldwide every year. And try to wrap your minds around that. 2 billion in the last 50 years. And then we accuse the people in the past of being terrible, atrocious, you know, not respecting human rights, causing massacres and Holocaust. Wow. And we don't see what's happening under our very noses. There's a certain like blindness, you know, about the current culture of death. The sexual revolution in 1968 was a Copernican turn, a revolution within the West that for all its promise of new pleasures, freedoms, and rights has left in its wake broken families, traumatized children, wounded women. It would not have been this way had Pope Paul VI's prophetic encyclical been well received by the bishops and the faithful, particularly in the West. Instead of contraception being allowed only in exceptional cases, as dissidents at the time were demanding, a high percentage of Catholics are now regularly using artificial contraception of all kinds. It has become part of culture, of the norm, something people cannot imagine living without. In consequence, sexuality has become banal, promiscuity widespread, intimacy hollowed, hollowed of its sacred dimension, the capacity of bringing forth new life that is at the heart of marital love. Many young people just simply live together. They don't see the reason to get married. What's marriage? What, you know, it's not like we're saving sex for marriage or anything. Why get married? Oh, we might get a tax break. They don't see the sacramentality, the beauty of marriage, because they live in this terrible culture. Even Paul VI did not see the depths to which we would sink through accepting the sexual revolution. And that, namely, is the gender ideology. And I can't talk about that because it would just go on forever. But, you know, this idea, I could stand before you today and say, I am a black woman. I woke up today and decided I was a black woman. And you would have to say, yes, sir, you are. Because that's what it is. I am a homosexual today. Tomorrow, I'm a transsexual. The next day, who knows? And that kind of absurdity, you know, is being enforced. I mean, people are being put in jail. They're losing their jobs because they dare to say that's stupid. Do you ever hear this joke? What is the main difference between intelligence and stupidity? There are limits to intelligence. It's true. It's absolutely true. Pope Paul VI was the first victim of humanae vitae. He suffered greatly, and especially from his fellow bishops who should have stood by him, but they didn't. He said in Humanae Vitae, imploring the bishops to lead their priests and faithful to consider the mission of safeguarding the holiness of marriage as one of their most urgent responsibilities at the present time. Instead, what happened? The German bishops had their Königsteiner Erklärung, saying Humanae Vitae, pfut. The Austrian bishops had their Maria Troster Erklärung. The Canadian bishops had their Winnipeg statement, saying, in conscience, do whatever you want. A completely erroneous view of a well-formed conscience, saying, if you think contraception is okay, go for it. No guidance from the bishops. Whatever one does in this life has tremendous reverberations throughout all of eternity. And disobedience to the church has reverberations. At the same time, where would we be today if Humanae Vitae had not come out? If Paul VI had not written his prophetic words? That the two miracles necessary for his beatification and his canonization should be the healing of two separate unborn babies is a sign from heaven that his encyclical was meant to stem the tide of the culture of death about to wash over the earth. Father Marx pointed out one of the main reasons for the growing strength of those who follow Humanae Vitae. Those who follow Humanae Vitae. Why are they so strong? They have children. And not just one or two. In the USA, polls show that pro-life families have an average of 4 children. Pro-abortion families, 1 child. Brute demographics is one of the pro-life movement's greatest allies. as the pro-abortions contracept, sterilize, abort, euthanize themselves out of existence, pro-lifers are raising their large families. Patrick and Therese McChrystal, God bless them. They're leading by example in Ireland. The eldest of their 8 children is 16. Their youngest is 5 months. God bless them. As demographer Philip Longman discovered, 10% of the women of the baby boom generation in the United States had 25% of the children of the baby boom generation. And you can bet they were not radical feminists, those who were having 25% of the children. In one of the most leftist areas of America, Seattle, Washington, Bill Gates' land, Seattle, Washington, the national census in 2000 revealed that the average household, the average home, average family had more dogs and cats than children. This is not the case, emphatically not the case, in the Bible Belt in the south of the United States and in conservative parts of the USA. Father Paul Marks, the founder of HLI, was the 13th child of 14 living children of his mother. His mother had 17 pregnancies. 14 of the children survived, and Father Marks was number 13. Of those children, 4 became priests or nuns. And interestingly, they were all Benedictines. One of the children became a dissenter from Humanae Vitae. So even in the Marx family, there was some that were lost. And the culture of death does sadly claim a few of our children and brainwashes some people who come from good families. This is especially the case through hedonistic sex education and frequently at university, where liberalism reigns supreme. But we have the opportunity and duty to bring people into the light and out of the darkness. In Vienna a few years ago, I participated in a pro-life prayer vigil organized by HLI Austria. We started with Mass, we had Eucharistic adoration, and then we had a rosary procession accompanied by the police to an abortion center, Marie Stopes Center. When we arrived, there was a huge group of people frenzied, gesticulating. They had purple hair, and they had, you know, tattoos and piercings and everything else, and screaming and yelling, you know, pro-abortion slogans, and we were praying the rosary. And at the end, they had a testimony, and the person said, "Last year, I was on the other side of the barrier. I was," and I looked around, and I saw these crazy people. I mean, a vision of hell, you know, with purple hair and you know, screaming and yelling, and I saw you, nice, well-dressed, friendly people, and I said, "I should be on their side." And he, praise God, he came to our side. You know, and we do. We reach out and we can help people to come into the light and out of the darkness. So the Bible says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." Humanae Vitae is the truth of God, that the church has always taught from the beginning, and the church cannot do anything other than proclaim this truth. May God bless you, and may God bless Ireland.